are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I think you will be too. And I hope you come back night after night after night, Monday through Friday, right here, same place, same time. And don't miss a single second of a Kevin Smith Show, because if you do, you miss a whole universe of information. All right, in the news, of course, it's pretty big news right now, is this collision of the two satellites that I told you about yesterday. One of the satellites was a Russian satellite, a big one, and it was sort of careening out of control, and the other satellite was a satellite owned by the Iridium communication system. And it was a spectacular collision. The Russians say that it's our fault. Their reasoning is that since their satellite was careening out of control, we should have moved our satellite out of the way. Well, you know, that's sort of like the guy that loses control of his car and crashes into the side of your house, and then sues you because your house was in the way. But the story doesn't end there. You see, the U.S. says that it was not a U.S. satellite that got clobbered. It was a satellite owned by a private corporation. Now, the private corporation says, well, they could have moved their satellite if someone would have just warned them that this was about to happen and that their satellite was in the path of this out-of-control Russian satellite. Now, folks, there are several agencies, some military, some not military, that are tracking all that stuff that's out there in space. Did none of these agencies see this Russian satellite coming on a collision course with the Iridium satellite? You know, if so, that's pretty ominous, because it makes you wonder just how safe the astronauts are on the space station. I mean, are these people that are tracking the space junk asleep at the switch? There's something in the story we're not being told. There's something essential that's being left out of this. All right, I sent the K-Files e-zine out today, and in the K-Files e-zine there were links to some videos about Antarctica, and amazingly these videos show warm water lakes and land without snow. Now, I got a few emails already from people telling me that this is because of global warming, that this is the evidence of global warming. Let's see. One of those videos was taken in 1946, and that isn't global warming. That's just the way Antarctica is. It has regions that are warm enough to have liquid water lakes and no snow and ice. It has some pretty large regions like that. Kind of like Mars, the real facts about Antarctica do not seem to be getting to us. We're going to take a break When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking with Walter Bosley about some other stuff you don't see or hear in the mainstream media. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, you know, if you've been listening to or watching the Kevin Smith Show for any length of time, you know this guest. He's been with us several times and is always a real wealth of information. Walter Bosley. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Walter, just to kind of give you a frame of reference, Walter formerly did work for the FBI, did some work for them as a specialist. He's a former special agent for the AFOSI, AFOSI, Air Force Office of Special Investigations. And he is a paranormal investigator, paranormal researcher, a writer, a public speaker, and he owns a publishing company that publishes all manner of books that that deal with these kind of subjects. Walter, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks for having me back, Kevin. It's always good to be here.
You know, Walter, we have, in the past, we've talked about, when you were on the show, we've talked about Mars and strange things on Mars. We have talked about, and I've gotten you actually to go on the air with me and sort of analyze some photographs and say what you thought about those things. And that was Mars and the Moon. We've also talked about a really strange anomaly. Oh, it's not an anomaly. It's only an anomaly in our thinking. I think these things are very normal, but something that lots of people had not heard of, and that's ley lines that seem to just be all over the Earth. And I thought it might be interesting this evening if we sort of pulled together some of this information instead of having information out there in space and information here on Earth. Maybe we could kind of pull it together. But first, I think it would be good for us if you could explain to the audience what you think ley lines are, what their purpose is. Now, let me say, before we get into that, that, folks, ley lines are lines of energy that course all over the Earth, and they can be detected and measured with instruments. And now the question, Walter, is, yeah, okay, so what are they? What are they doing?
Well, as you stated, to take it further, just for the purists out there, some people will point out that, yes, originally ley lines were those lines across the terrain between European churches and cathedrals and other megalithic sites. But as you said, we've come to use the term ley line to mean or refer to this world grid of these energy lines. Now, they have, from what I've seen, in my studies and other researchers that I know, they have kind of a multiple purpose. They appear to actually be involved in the forming of our land masses and the features within those masses, such as canyons and coastlines and, you know, the very shapes of continents and such. So in that regard, gosh, you know, what are they that they have this power to, you know, shape our land masses? Now, they are also associated with electromagnetic phenomena. And what I mean by that is measurable electromagnetic phenomena. For example, there's an intersection of these things at Colorado Springs in Colorado, and we know that Nikola Tesla was there in Colorado Springs and did amazing things using the natural electromagnetics of the Earth. Like, you know, you put a metal rod in the ground, and you can provide light and power for an entire city, essentially. That's the essential idea. So, you know, there's another property of this world grid system of these energy lines. They form land masses. They produce an energy which can be used freely. So, you know, again, what exactly are they? This is one of the products. Shaping the land masses and the geography and then providing an energy is a product. Excuse me?
No, I said nothing.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard you say something. I thought
nope.
You were asking me something. So, anyway, so I believe that when you look into the other extraordinary phenomena, which we've discussed on the show, that are also associated with this world grid system of what we call ley lines, these energy lines, these extraordinary phenomena include the major concentrations of UFO sightings, but also other phenomena such as what we call ghosts and also time shifting or interdimensional shift. So there's yet another element of the mystery of what these things are. I believe that the land that they are used for various uses. One of them is to shape land masses. Another one is to tap into the energy of them. Some people believe that the UFOs, because they're seen in mostly in areas where these lines flow and move through, that maybe the UFOs are using them as kind of like a train uses a rail, or more specifically, an electric train uses an electric rail. That, you know, they follow these because this is the thing that energizes their craft. But in my research, for those who have, you know, listened to us talk about it before or have read my book, Latitude 33, I also believe that they are portals to other dimensions, including time and literally other physical dimensions.
All right. Now, you touched on this, but let's dig off into this a little bit. You are of the opinion that ley lines actually create the conditions necessary for life to exist on the surface of the planet. Is that right?
Yes, that is yet another element of this whole mystery, and I believe that the electromagnetic properties of this world grid contribute to that sphere in the atmosphere or the whatever sphere of our planet. I am not an astronomer, so I tend to forget the actual term sometimes when I'm talking about this. But what allows for a livable atmosphere on the surface of our planet, I believe this world grid is every bit a part of and contributes to that, yes.
Walter, how many ley lines are there on the planet? Has anybody tried to count them?
Oh, my gosh. Just the map I have of the lines in North America alone, you know, it's, my gosh, it's I'm, now my map is a kind of a general map, and there's got to be, you know, close to 100 of these things coursing and flowing throughout just North America, northern Mexico, and southern Canada alone. So we're talking potentially, you know, hundreds, if not 1,000, you know, over the Earth. It's really, I mean, it's truly phenomenal. There's the evidence that we, and I say we, you know, myself and many other people who've written about this before me and other writers who talk about it, like Joseph Farrell and Sechery, you know, the evidence that they have used and I've used to, you know, present my theories and such, this kind of evidence exists all over the world, the same type of phenomena.
Now, when you came out here to the Phoenix area and you and I went out to South Mountain.
Yes.
We looked at your map, and we counted the number of ley lines that intersect right out at South Mountain, and it, I think we counted 14 that intersect. Yeah, they come together all at the same point, and sitting right on top of that is something they call Mystery Castle. You know, some of our audience has the video of that, and they snapped it up pretty quick when we made that available. But the question I've got is, if you lived in Mystery Castle, sitting on top of these 14 ley lines, sitting on this intersection of 14 ley lines, what sort of phenomena would you expect to experience?
You should expect to experience just about anything and everything that others have. Strange objects in the sky. You and I both know that that has been observed indeed right there at that area of South Mountain. You should experience, doorways between other dimensions. You and I and your viewers that have seen the video of the petroglyphs, which show the image of the man and the lizard man developing from the vortices symbol, the vortex symbol, that is present there too. So somebody has witnessed that there. Hauntings, any kind of shifts in time or strange slips in time. You name it.
Apparently, if that's going on right there in the Mystery Castle, it's single resident. It's one resident is the daughter of the man that built it, and apparently she hasn't talked about any of that. At least there's not any of it published anywhere. But I think it would be fascinating if we could get an interview with her and find out if she has seen, heard, or experienced any of this strange phenomena, because all around that Mystery Castle are petroglyphs depicting everything you just talked about.
Absolutely.
And, of course, those are ancient. They come from ancient times, you know. And but apparently, as you said, someone saw these things happening there.
And she... the resident at Mystery Castle may be seeing them. Other people who have hiked through that canyon may have experienced some of this and not recognized it as such. That is always a possibility as well.
You know, the thing, this really has nothing to do with the ley lines, but I'm still impressed with one thing that we experienced when we climbed up on the side of that mountain. And that is that from way up top, we could hear perfectly whatever was being said on the ground as people would walk through. And I just can't get it out of my mind. I still remember vividly the lady that came through walking the dog, and you could hear the dog's footsteps.
Yes. Yeah, hearing the dog's footsteps was mighty impressive.
And folks need to know that the trail on which the dog was walking was really fine powder sand. I mean, almost like baby powder. And there should have been no way we could have heard that dog from the distance we were. I wonder, and the reason, the only connection actually, with the ley lines is that from that position, we were standing on a ledge where there were two markings for portals, for doorways, and there were petroglyphs of these lizard beings coming up out of the vortex, out of the vortices, and we could hear things so perfectly from right there, better than I hear anything, anytime, anywhere. And I just wonder, you know, you put that together with that doorway of Aramaru that Jerry Wills talks about, it's activated by sound, by tones. And I just wonder if maybe that doorway where we were standing would be activated by sound.
That, you know, the sonic solution, that would make sense to me. That would make very much sense to me. And you know what? We have a precedent in ancient lore for that, and that is the classic tale of Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves, when they would approach the cave, the secret cave that was covered by the stone door, and, you know, the famous open sesame thing. Basically what that was a voice activation command on some type of ancient vault. And, you know, approaching these kinds of stories, you know, mythology, that there's some type of nugget of truth that inspired such a so-called myth, are we to understand then that there was, you know, the remnants of some ancient lost civilization that, you know, this Ali Baba character, you know, discovered their vault and discovered that, you know, that it was voice activated. So there, you know, there is the ancient mythological precedent for this, and it's perhaps there's one of these vaults there in South Mountain. Maybe that's why portions of it are off limits. And what's interesting is, as you told me, there was an underground city inside the mountain.
Well, yeah, that's the story. But this underground city was built, I guess, during the 1800s. It was built in and under the mountain for miners, and the reason is, as you well know, it is incredibly hot out there, and so the miners didn't have to get out into the sunshine. You know, they did their mining, and then they had an underground city. I think there was a hotel and a couple of bars and some stores, and then places for them to live. And that's supposed to be somewhere out there at South Mountain. And there are little caves everywhere. You know, you and I found one.
Mm-hmm.
And when you crawl up into that, you can only go about, I don't know, 8.5, 10 feet. And then there are rocks that look like someone has blocked it off. You can see further because the rocks don't form a perfect seal. You can see between the rocks, and you can see it goes further back.
Right.
But you can't get back there. So who knows, maybe the entrance to that city or town underground may be blocked off like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Walter, these ley lines are not, this is not something new. And I really want people to understand this before we go forward. We got a break coming up. But before we go to that break, I want folks to really understand this is not something new. Ley lines are not new. You and I are talking about petroglyphs that actually, one of the petroglyphs we found marks the location of a ley line and then has two markings showing two portals or doorways right there on the ley line.
Right.
Now, those petroglyphs are hundreds, if not thousands of years old. No one really knows. No one really knows who put them there. But they've been there since great antiquity, as far as the Americas go. That's great antiquity. It's hundreds and hundreds of years, perhaps thousands. So they knew about these ley lines. They, of course, probably didn't call it ley lines. They had some other word for it. But they marked them. And they marked phenomena, they drew the phenomena they observed at that spot. So apparently these things have been known to ancient peoples going way, way back. But, well, a break has started. I'll finish the question when we come back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, Walter Bosley, Ley Lines, and before long, Mars. We'll be back. And well, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. And, Walter, when we went to break, I was making the case that these ley lines have been known for centuries, if not millennia. And so this is not something that's new. And I want people to understand that when we talk about this, we're not talking about some kind of harebrained new age woo-woo something. We're talking about things that a phenomena, a natural phenomena here on this planet that has been known to ancient peoples all over the world. Now, if I'm not mistaken, aren't there ley lines that cross through the Great Pyramid?
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, there are ley lines crossing through almost every major mystical site on the planet from antiquity. So they had some way of knowing that they were there.
Right.
What about Mars? Are there ley lines on Mars?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, you had asked me that before and I looked into it, and I believe that indeed there are.
Okay, well, what makes you believe that there are ley lines there?
Well, if we refer to the book The Handprint of Atlas by Sesh Hari, which is a phenomenal book. the author Hari talks about these ley lines and how they factor into his theory of what his book presents, which is fascinating in itself. But in that book, he talks about these lines. We have to look at the makeup of the Earth, okay? The Earth, the northern hemisphere, is known, even to geologists, it's considered this. It's the northern hemisphere is the land hemisphere of the Earth. That's where most of the land is concentrated on our planet. The southern hemisphere is the water hemisphere. Now, what's interesting is the lines we're discussing are closer together in the land hemisphere, and they're farther apart in the southern water hemisphere. So this has been observed by Hari and others who've studied the phenomena. Now, if we go look at Mars, and the problem with Mars is there's no water on the surface, at least not anymore. It is believed there were seas on the surface. But an interesting fact about Mars is the entire landmass of Mars that we see is equal to the landmass that we see on the surface above the seas of the Earth combined. If you combined all the landmass of our continents and our islands on Earth that we, you know, they're above the water we're talking about here, it equals the surface landmass of Mars. I find that interesting. It's almost, you could ask yourself, is Earth minus water the size of Mars? And
all right, so but Mars at one time had oceans. So what about the landmass that it had then? It would be less than Earth, wouldn't it?
You know, possibly. It's just an interesting little fact that I threw out there. But now you have to ask yourself, when Mars had water, okay, where was the greatest amount of land mass? Was it in the northern hemisphere of the planet, or was it in the southern hemisphere? Was Mars similar to Earth in that way? Could we, therefore, by studying any similarities between Mars and Earth, could we identify which land was above the water by any similar features? In other words, are there similar features to Earth where we have identified the ley lines? You talk about the ancient sites like the Great Pyramid of Egypt, and that this is one of the sites where we know the ley lines go through and they play an important role in. And what's interesting is, indeed, Giza, Cairo, is in the northern hemisphere of the Earth. Here's what's interesting. Sidonia, where it is believed there, it's been identified and shown in photographs that there are pyramids on Mars, Sidonia is in the northern hemisphere of Mars. so there we have right there an example of a similar feature that we have associated the ley lines with on our planet. There we have a similar feature associated with the same hemisphere on another planet that our pyramids are on. In other words, Cairo in the northern hemisphere, Sidonia in the northern hemisphere, was the landmass of Mars, mostly in the northern hemisphere. And so therefore, is that evidence of the ley lines? Because we see the similar, if we see the similar phenomena of landmass in the northern hemisphere, water mass in the southern hemisphere on Mars, if we see that on Mars like we see here on Earth, is that evidence of these lines? I say so because look at the Earth as a magnet, which we're told that it is, essentially. Tesla certainly proved that. The northern magnetic pole is the positive end. The southern magnetic pole is the negative end. Maybe this on a planetary scale, the positive end draws the surface landmass to it, therefore leaving the negative end mostly water, because the land is drawn like steel to a magnet, any kind of metal to a magnet, the land is drawn to that. So therefore, when we look at Mars, I say that if we look closely, we will probably find the clues that will prove that most of the landmass on Mars, when it had water, was in its northern hemisphere. And I say that is a result of the presence of these lines, because these lines are every bit connected to the northern, or I'm sorry, the polarities of our planet here. I say it would be the same on Mars.
Okay, now assuming that Mars had ley lines, does it still have ley lines? Because if ley lines provide if they create the conditions, or at least maintain the conditions necessary for life on the surface, mm-hmm. You look at Mars, and it appears to be mostly lifeless, except for those giant forests that have been photographed.
Right.
So what about that? Are the ley lines still active on Mars, or are they not?
Well, I say that similar to in my book, Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom, in which I say that the device at Disneyland was disengaged, I think something similar might have occurred on Mars. I think something was disengaged, and the lines were essentially, the surface grid was turned off. Or, as we've talked about on the show before, and you know what I believe, I think the life is still there on Mars, and it went inside. It might be that the grid on Mars was reversed to support life in the interior, or they're drawing it to the interior, so we're just not seeing it on the surface of Mars. So, but it was in some way deactivated.
Hmm. What do you think could do that?
I think that a planetary cataclysm, like Mars being struck by some celestial body, could do it. I think Mars being struck by some massive planetary, you know, planet-scale weapon. And of course, Joseph Farrell talks about this in his Giza Death Star books. You really should check those out, because it could have been the weapon that he believes the Great Pyramid was. And he says we were in a war with Mars, and they used the Great Pyramid to fire at Mars. And that is, you know, it might have been something like that that destroyed their surface grid system, forcing, you know, the refugees to either go inside or come here, which I believe many of them came here. But
are you one?
Pardon?
Are you one of them?
Could be. You could be one of them. Any one of us could be among them. Interesting you should bring that up, because, you know, you go farther back in history, human history, and you might find the clues. For instance, the appearance of Cro-Magnon man. Cro-Magnon man might have been the people from Mars. The human beings from Mars that just suddenly showed up on Earth. Well, of course they just suddenly showed up because they were refugees. Their planet was destroyed. Now, what's interesting is it's been identified that O-type blood is the oldest known human blood of present living humans, okay? I happen to have O-type blood, universal donor, you know, and so it's kind of interesting. You know, maybe those of us, all of us here that have this O-type blood are, you know, descendants of these people from Mars. Who knows? But I do believe that, you know, whoever was on Mars at one time, some of them, I believe, had to have come here, certainly.
But you think some of them are still there but living inside?
Sure. Yeah.
How would they be able to have food and water if they're living inside the planet? And when we say inside the planet, we're talking about in deep caverns and so forth.
Yeah, well, vast habitable spaces inside. And well, you know, we assume that, we're taught that the interior of our Earth is a molten volcanic hot core, okay? We're taught this, but here's, you know, the fact is, no further than we've drilled inside our planet is you know, what is it, just a couple of miles?
I think we've gone down about 9 miles now.
Okay, 9 miles, and you know, the planet's a little bit deeper than 9 miles here on Earth.
Well, yeah, I think you know, the crust is what, 900 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, we have barely scratched the surface of the crust.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that that our planet is a molten, hot, uninhabitable center is still a theory. And like evolution, human evolution, is still a theory. I hate to tell the true believers of it, but you know, we have to remind ourselves that it's a theory. And so we the layman, honestly don't know what's habitable inside the celestial bodies.
What generates ley lines? What causes them?
Well, the planets individually, their very magnetic nature, the poles, the specifically the positive pole, that could be the generator, so to speak. There could be something in the center of the planet that is the generator. It could be the string theory, the idea that there are, you know, these strings of energy connecting everything throughout the universe. It could be that the stars connected, stars, pulsars, whatever, the stars connected to this string network are the actual generators of these lines. It could be that.
So we know that they are coursing with electromagnetic energy, but we don't know where that comes from.
Correct.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you. Someone else might.
Now, what do you think would happen? We've got about 2 minutes here, or a minute and 20 seconds. What do you think would happen if the ley lines suddenly got turned off here on Earth? What would happen to this planet?
I believe if the ley lines were suddenly turned off, we would all die. I think that it's like the electric plug to an appliance. The appliance would turn off, and therefore our life-sustaining atmosphere would turn off and would run down, and we'd die. On the surface, anyway.
Well, okay, now we've only got 30 seconds here, and then we're going to be into a break. But when we come back from this break, I want to examine, why would I be able to survive inside the planet if I couldn't survive on the outside of the planet? If there's no oxygen for me on the outside, why would there be on the inside? If there's no water for me outside, why would there be on the inside? And we'll get to that when we come back from this break. So don't go away, folks. More with Walter Bosley right after this. We'll be right back. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Walter Bosley is my guest, and we're talking about this very strange, but not new, natural feature of Earth and maybe other planets. We call them ley lines. And, Walter, if ley lines supply what is necessary to generate a life support system out on the surface of the planet, and they get turned off by whatever means, why would I be able to survive inside the planet? Why would I be able to live, have oxygen and water and things I need essential for life inside the planet if it's not available outside?
Well, let's remember that the outsides of the celestial bodies, they're exposed to all that radiation that space bombards the planets with, see? This is the reason, one of the big reasons why the astronauts had to wear suits on the moon and the gold visors and such is because the radiation that is bombarding. Now, our atmosphere protects us from, being bombarded with these dangerous rays. And naturally, when you're on the inside, it's like being on the inside of a ball. You know, you're protected. It works as a shield around you, a literal physical shield. Now, but you would ask, okay, well, how can flora and fauna and water exist, to sustain human life inside? And the answer again may be in the past, so-called mythology. In the stories associated with Hollow Earth mythology, there is a lot of evidence for what they would call it a central sun. But there may be, if you look at the mythology, there may be what you would call a sun in the center of the empty void of the planet, the center of the planet that provides the energy, that provides what's necessary for a life-sustaining habitat inside the planet, as it were. And that might explain these legends of a central sun, that there's some type of pulsar or something in the center of the Earth that that powers the system to sustain life inside. And because it's not being bombarded with these dangerous rays, perhaps it's easier to sustain that habitat.
Okay, then I guess what I'm saying is, if we don't have whatever conditions are necessary, for instance, to generate oxygen on the outside of the planet, and we don't have that because the ley lines have been turned off by a meteor strike or an asteroid strike or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that that inside the planet you would still have whatever energy is necessary for generating oxygen.
Yes.
And this would be coming from what ancients call the central sun.
The central sun would be the power that generates the various ecosystems that produce the necessary habitat to sustain life, yes.
Well, there are some pretty interesting stories, even from early to mid-1900s, like up into the 1950s, maybe up into the 70s, of expeditions where people took expeditions deep into the earth and came out saying that they did encounter civilizations in there.
Yes.
Now, these have never been corroborated or verified by anyone other than people who were on that expedition.
Right.
On the other hand...
Publicly,
yeah. On the other hand... there are a lot of those stories from a lot of different places around the earth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I find interesting, Walter, is that Antarctica. I find that to be just a fascinating place. And in the newsletter that we publish, this week's edition, the K-Files e-zine, went out today. I put some links to some videos that show land on the continent of Antarctica that has no snow and ice, and a whole bunch of liquid water lakes. Beautiful lakes, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is on the continent that is said to be the coldest place on Earth.
Right.
And yet, land with no snow, no ice, and liquid water lakes.
Right.
Do you think that is because of ley lines, or what's causing that?
Well, not in a way that the ley lines are the answer to it, you know, but certainly the shapes of these features are definitely, you know, it definitely involves these lines. I think what causes the actual appearance of these lakes and these warm spots is connected to the magnetic poles and their activity. I think when the poles get ready to shift, which, you know, I believe they're getting ready to, I think we see, you know, extraordinary weather and you know, geophysical phenomena. I think that the impending pole shift explains more what people are calling global warming. As you know, I am not a proponent of the popular theory of global warming. I think it's a bunch of nonsense. The Earth warms and it cools. It goes back and forth. It does it every X number of years. You know, that is proven time and time again. But, you know, most people want to believe what they hear, you know, out of celebrities and out of other pop things. So, okay, whatever. I mean, I say some pretty wild things. So, you know, and some people, you know, believe me. So, who am I to criticize? But
yeah, but you didn't get an Oscar for it.
What's that?
You didn't get an Oscar for it.
And I didn't get a Nobel Prize for saying that crap either. But anyway.
Well, let me tag this on.
Al Gore? Yes. In fact, I was referring to Al Gore and his nonsense. But
well, let me tag this on to that. I think it's a misnomer that we've been sold global warming. That's not what's going on. It's ocean warming, and that is measurable, and it is happening, and that is changing the climate patterns around the world.
Sure.
But it's ocean warming, and it's because of incredible undersea volcanoes, incredible activity such as sure. has never been measured before, and that is actually truly a scientific fact. We're getting the a lot of the effects that people have attributed to global warming is actually because of ocean warming. Now, why would you attribute it to global warming and say that we're causing it? Well, that's to get everybody's minds off of the fact that it's happening and there's nothing we can do about it. If you get everybody diverted over to thinking, hey, you caused it, you can put a stop to it, then they don't panic.
Well, there's also the political aspect that you've got a bunch of people that are just so wanting to replace the petroleum industry that they're also using this global warming scare to get everybody to buy off on a bunch of technology. Basically, they want to trade one industry for another. And they're using global warming to get the public to buy off on the need to, you know, use corn fuel and green this and green that. And, you know, it's just another, you know, it really equates to another corporate type scam, you know, is what's going on. But you're absolutely right. I do believe that it's also a diversion from what they know is going to happen. And it's not our fault, and you're right, there's not a damn thing we can do about it. It has happened in the past. It will happen again. It's just the nature of the planet.
All right, now, I want to go back to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Do you suspect that inside of Mars, there exists a concentration of oxygen sufficient for human life.
Yes, and it is either naturally sustained or it is artificially sustained through technology.
I found it very interesting, this Phoenix lander. It landed, I guess it'll have to stay landed for a moment. The brake just took over. We'll get to that when we come back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, more with Walter Bosley right after this. And in a moment, we'll open up the phone lines for you. Welcome back. Walter, I'll tell you what. I think what we're going to do is just go ahead and open the phone lines, and we'll get around to my other questions in between the phone calls, if that's okay with you, sir.
That's fine with me. Hopefully we won't get a filibusterer.
I doubt it. Okay, folks, the telephone line is open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment for Walter, that's the number to call. Now, I find it to be, Walter, really some compelling thought for some food for thought, to think about the possibility of ley lines on Mars. And I'll tell you why right after this call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Walter.
Hi. I can hear you better than I can hear Kevin Smith.
Well, must be these Walmart phones, I tell you. What I want to know is, what do you think of the Gaia theory, and that these ley lines are actually possibly veins of energy, much like our blood flows through our veins, that the energy and the ley lines are the veins of a living planet? Have you ever thought of that?
Well, like a sentient being type planet?
Yeah, that it's the Gaia theory of
yeah, the Gaia theory. I'm familiar with the idea. I don't. I just personally, it doesn't. It doesn't. I'm not convinced of that. But it is interesting, because certainly these things, to describe the function of what these do, does seem to match that very well. So if that's true, if it turns out the Earth is some type of sentient being, then certainly I would agree with that. But personally, I haven't been convinced of that.
Well, you know, there is, they say that sometimes names that have lasted throughout millennium do have some sort of literal meaning somewhere in the past. And perhaps the name that Mother Earth possibly applies to that.
Possibly, but it could also just be what we take it as symbolic, because, you know, it is our safe haven here in this dangerous, violent universe, so to speak. Dangerous and violent from a geophysical, you know, type of perspective. So, sure. Either way.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Right, thanks, guys. Great show tonight.
All right. Thanks. 623-444-5889. The reason I think it is so compelling to think about the possibility of ley lines on Mars, even if they're no longer active, would we find on Mars petroglyphs by ancient peoples marking those lines, depicting what phenomena they saw happen there, as we do here on Earth? That would be fascinating. Imagine a manned mission to Mars, and imagine that when they step off of the spaceship and begin to explore, they start seeing these petroglyphs all around mm-hmm. them. Now, that would be fascinating, wouldn't it?
It would be if we would be allowed to know about it. That's the same problem a lot of people argue with the moon missions, that they found all sorts of interesting things that we were not and have not been told about. So, yeah, but the rub is, you know, until you or I or any of the listeners can get on a spaceship and go visit Mars and do this ourselves, unfortunately, we got to trust those who are going up there. And, you know, there's evidence that, you know, they might not tell us about it.
I think there are a lot of things they would not tell us about. But you know something? They're getting very, very close now to just saying, okay, guys, there's life out there. They're very, very close to that. They're trapped, really, by some of their own statements and press releases. They're trapped by the widespread availability of technology in the Western world, where people have been videotaping and photographing things that when someone comes along later and says, oh, well, you know, it was a Chinese wedding candle, you can look at the photograph and see that's nonsense. And so the public has outrun the spin machine. And the people who are in charge of keeping the secrets on all of this kind of stuff are very much aware of the fact that no one's buying the spin anymore. They know that. And I think that that has increased the pressure on them to do disclosure. And because of that, we're getting very close now to just a public statement that, hey, you know what? Gee, there's life out there. And let me give you a quick example or two and then get your reaction to it. Folks, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. On Mars in 1976, we landed something called the Viking Lander, and it scooped up some dirt. And it did an experiment, and what it registered, at first they said, whoa, look at this, that's signs of life. And then they backed off of it and said, well, wait a minute, let's run another experiment. That can't be exactly right. So they ran another experiment using different equipment, not even designed to detect what would have to be detected to say there's a biological process here. Well, obviously, then, it didn't detect it. It wasn't designed to. A shoe is not designed to work as a tire on your car. And if you try to use a shoe as a tire on your car, you're going nowhere. And that's basically what they did. And then they said, oh, well, the first experiment, that was flawed because the shoe didn't work as a tire. All right. In all of that, though, the chief biologist for the 1976 Viking Lander made a statement, the recording of that statement I have played on this show, in which he said, we found 15 times, not 15%, 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than we can account for. Well, Mars is supposed to have like 1% oxygen. Well, 15 times that is 15%. And you and I can breathe and live on 15% oxygen. Mm-hmm. It would be like being high in the mountains, but you can do it. All right, now, you come fast forward over to the Phoenix Lander. The Phoenix Lander scooped up some dirt, and they put it into a little oven and baked it on board the spaceship there. And it gave off, the spectrometer had a spike. And, you know, they were amazed. And, they said, wow. And then they said it was perchlorate. Well, perchlorate has to have chlorine in it. That's what the perchlorate is. You see, it had no chlorine in it. It was just oxygen. So they did what the Viking lander crew did and said, well, that must be a mistake. So they scooped up some more, and instead of dumping it into a little oven and baking it, they dumped it into a wet lab and put some chemicals on it and then measured the gases coming off of it, and they got the same spike, oxygen. And they still said it's perchlorate. And then the first thing they did is they released a statement saying, well, yeah, but you see, that means, well, life probably couldn't live there because perchlorate is harmful to living organisms. That statement came out, and the next night, Walter, no, that night, I went on the air and read from some documents stating that 27 states of the United States are, quote, contaminated with perchlorate. It has not kept us from living.
Right.
Plus, that's not perchlorate. There's no chlorine in it. It was just oxygen. Now, when we take your theory about these ley lines serving as sort of the biosphere generator that makes it possible for us to live out on the planet, then you speculate about Mars and say, well, okay, if the ley lines on Mars were activated, would it charge up all this oxygen that's in the dirt? If you need oxygen on Mars, apparently all you do is burn dirt. So would it charge it up and suddenly the atmosphere would fill with oxygen? You know, nobody really knows that, but, you
it's
know.
It's an intriguing possibility.
It is an intriguing possibility. Plus, there's already 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than we can account for from all known sources, according to the chief scientist, the chief biologist for the Viking lander in 1976. So now let me ask you this. If there's already 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than they can account for, and that means it must be bringing that up to around 15% concentration of oxygen. And if you and I can already live on 15% oxygen, why aren't we seeing some of these human life forms out on the surface that you think may be living inside the planet?
Say that again. Why are we...
Well, if we've got all that oxygen already out there in that atmosphere, 15 times more than they can account for from all known sources, if that's already in the atmosphere and you and I could live on 15% oxygen, why are we not seeing any of these human-like beings out on the surface that you think may possibly be living inside the planet?
Well, I'll say this. For starters, the reason you and I are not seeing it is because it's not being shown to us. But it doesn't mean NASA and whoever else is up there is not seeing them, for starters. But to explain it further, it might be that, sure, while you can go out on the surface and survive, it's, the natural living habitat has moved inside, so... I think what you're going to see or would probably be a minimal amount of human activity on the surface, you know, explorers for the interest of exploration, archaeologists, people looking for resources, you know. So it's not like there would be huge numbers to be seen anyway, you know.
Okay. All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. How you doing? This is Ryan in Washington. How you doing?
Good, Ryan.
Well, I got to say, Kevin, you're doing a great job. I personally don't see how you do shows 5 days a week without getting burnt out. You're probably one of the hardest working guys in the business. I just want to say thank you for a week full of... It was a great week of very fascinating programming this week.
Well, thank you.
And I'm sure you'll have another week next week.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask Walter, what do you think about this story that was released on the Associated Press about apparently Egypt unveiled a 2,600-year-old mummy. This was about 2 days ago. I wonder if that's the start of something. Because, you know, I look at the images on Mars, and, you know, I've been fascinated with Tom Van Flanders' work, and I've told Kevin about that before. Of course, he passed away, rest in peace. But some of the pyramids that the images that I've seen, I personally, in my opinion, I'm convinced that those pyramids, there's just the shape of them, they look so precise that it's almost impossible for that to happen naturally. But
you're talking about pyramids on Mars?
Mars and a pyramid in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
The Egyptians have to know something. You think they might start talking about what they know?
Well, you got to understand, the Egyptians that we know today are not the people who built the Great Pyramid. You know, in spite of what Zawi Hawass says, and the official story out of the officials of Egypt, the Egyptians of today are not the people. The Egyptians of Ramses' day in you know ancient history are not the people who built the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. That was a forgotten, somewhat you know pretty much unknown race who was almost as much a mystery to Ramses as they are to us today. The mummy that you talked about being discovered, I would have to know, was there something special about where it was found or about the mummy itself that makes it different from any of the other mummies that have been found?
Well, it says here, Egyptian laborers used crowbars and picks Wednesday to lift the lid off a 26-year-old limestone sarcophagus that was apparently at a burial chamber 36 feet below an ancient necropolis of Saqqara. I really don't. I'm not a very good as on this kind of stuff. I just found this article. I just wonder what you thought about that. And thank you for taking my call. And great job, Kevin.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But to take that further, Kevin, I it's always great when they find you know these mummies. I think it's fascinating. In fact, I heard something yesterday that they found 22 new mummies. It's always really cool when they find this stuff, but it may be, unless something turns up very special or very distinct, you know, for instance, the person that they found was maybe 9 or 10 feet tall in life, you know, that would be something that would set it apart from the others.
Well, I'll tell you, the thing that's got me fascinated about Egypt is the Sphinx.
Yes.
Because they did find chambers under the right paw, maybe the left paw, but they found chambers underground under one of the paws of the Sphinx.
Right.
Immediately sealed it off.
Sure.
And told the archaeologists they couldn't go in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know what's in those chambers.
And the people who have a stake in controlling what's in those chambers don't want you and I to know, and you know we won't know until the controllers find some way to capitalize or exploit that for their own purposes. You know, basically in humanity, we've got controllers and we got people who don't want to control others and who don't want to be controlled. And that's been an age-old battle, struggle. We're in it right now here in the U.S. with all the stuff that's going on. And, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Charles from Ohio.
Okay, Charles, you're going to have to speak up and speak right into your phone. We can barely hear you.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Kevin. This is Charles from Ohio,
uh-huh.
And I was just talking about the ley lines,
mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen to the ley lines if the poles shift?
Now, that's a good question. What about that? What happens in a pole shift? Do the ley lines die, or do they simply start running a different polarity?
That's a good question. I would say that they keep running. Rather than just a different polarity, they might, or switch, you know, switching the direction of the polarity or what their polarity is, they might also kind of shift in their own shape. and therefore reshape the surface land, or just move the power grid in a different pattern, as it were.
Okay.
But I don't think that in a pole shift that they would shut down, because here's what I believe about pole shift. I believe pole shift is a mechanism that was engineered. Yes, I definitely believe that, and that theory is more greatly explained in the handprint of Atlas by Sacheri, the premise of which is that the axis of the Earth is artificial, and it was artificially set. And this shifting of the poles is a natural, it's a natural thing, but it was engineered to work like a machine so that it does it like clockwork. Every so often this happens, and the evidence is there. Every so often this happens, and the whole thing works together. It's just kind of it's a perpetual motion machine in some ways. But the lines work with the poles, and the poles work with the lines. So my guess is that the lines go on until the poles are shut down or disengaged.
Okay, Charles, you have another question or comment?
No, thank you.
All right, I have one. Charles, are you a first-time caller?
No, I called in once a long time ago.
When you called in before, did I play some applause for you?
No, you didn't.
Oh, well, when you were a first-time caller, I guess we didn't have this queued up. So here's some applause for you. Thank you very much for your call. The actual axis, the spin axis of our planet, and the magnetic pole axis. If you draw a line from the north magnetic pole to the south magnetic pole, it's not the same as the spin axis of the planet. It actually misses the spin axis by 327.3 miles.
Okay, but that's the way it is now. Mm-hmm. I and others argue that that's the way it is now, and that's why we're about to have a shift. When after the pole shift, for many, many, many ages, those two axes are indeed the same. And what happens is the wobble of the Earth, for the various reasons, moves, it causes this discrepancy between the physical axis and the magnetic axis, and then you have shift to readjust. And that's what the shift is going to do. It is going to bring the magnetic axis back into line with the physical axis. They will again be one and the same.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show, and you'll have to be really quick because we've got a break coming up.
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from Phoenix. My question is basically this. Where you have more than one or two of these ley lines crossing, what happens at the point where the ley lines cross? Is there anything special about that?
One of my favorite questions. Yes, I'm one of those who believes that there's absolutely something special about that, and I've written an entire book about it, Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom, in which I explain what I believe happened to me at Disneyland as a result of a device being applied to the intersection of three of these lines. We discussed earlier.
We're into the break. Jerry, do you want to hang on during the break?
Sure, that's fine.
All right, you hang on. You won't hear anything but your own hold. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have Jerry online from Phoenix, and my guest this evening is Walter Bosley. Walter, I had to cut you off as you were answering Jerry's question, and his question was, if I remember correctly, what happens at the intersection of these lines?
Well, and as I was saying, I was mentioning South Mountain. South Mountain is the intersection of several of these lines, one of the biggest intersections in North America. And as a matter of fact, it may be the biggest. And there we have all sorts of strange phenomena, of course, have been reported. But let's bring it down to earth for more people to grasp. There are about, seven peaks in the South Mountain area, Kevin?
Seven main peaks, yeah.
Yeah, seven main peaks. And what's interesting, you stand in downtown Phoenix and you look towards South Mountain, and you will see that the concentration of numerous major radio towers are all clumped together right there on the peak that is in line with this intersection. And the other peaks, why not spread those out? Why not, get them spread out all over the peaks? No, they clump them right on the peak that is the peak connected to just above where these intersection of these lines are. Now, let's go over to Colorado Springs, where there is an intersection of 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm counting here off my map, 5, 6, 7, almost as many as in, if not, almost as many as in South Mountain. And as we know, Colorado Springs is a major U.S. Air, there's a major U.S. Air Force presence there. And Nikola Tesla chose Colorado Springs to build his most fantastic lab that he ever built. So something's going on there that brought Tesla there. Something's going on there that the U.S. Air Force has some real interesting things there, some of which I'm not even going to get into, some of which even I, that I certainly don't know, but I know the presence is there. What's interesting is you look at these places, many of them where there are these intersections of ley lines, and you find that. You find communications towers. You find military bases. Along these lines, you look at the maps, and as I've said before, some type of electrical engineers and such, they know what's going on with these things because they're putting, repeatedly certain things, mostly communications towers and military bases, things that rely on important communications and advanced technologies, where these intersections are, and certainly along the lines, but also where these intersections are. So to answer the question, what is happening there, there is either on a nuts and bolts level an intensification of natural electromagnetic properties of the Earth to be tapped into and taken advantage of. And what could that do? Well, the possibilities beyond that are interdimensional, maybe physical dimension or the dimension of time, on that far out end.
All right, Jerry, you have another question or comment?
No, I'm fascinated. This is just absolutely interesting to me, so, as you well know. So, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you answering my question, and you're doing a great job,
sure.
Kevin.
Thanks for the call, Jerry.
All right.
All right, folks, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you live outside of the United States, or you live outside of Canada, and you don't want to make that long-distance call, you can send me a flash message, and you do that by simply going to my website, and it's kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you'll see a green link that says flash message, and we've got a flash message now from Australia, and this is from Jeff in Australia. And it says a couple of ideas that have been with me for years. One is the name and the difference of marsupials, marsupials. But he's got M-A-R-S, the first part of that word, in caps. Okay, marsupials that exist primarily in Australia. Were these animals the remnants of the animal life on Mars, hence marsupials? Perhaps the pouches enabled them to survive harsher conditions on Mars. The second idea is the ley lines that Bruce Cathy, in his book called Harmonics 333, Harmonics 666, and another that I can't remember, he says, worked out a grid system from his study of the sightings of UFOs. He says that there are actually two grid systems on the planet and that the UFOs use these to fly about the Earth. During his investigations, he found out that the UFOs were actually repairing the grids at certain points on the grids that UFOs were seen to fire energy beams to the ground. His opinion was that they were replacing dysfunctional antennas at these points. So let's take the first one. What about marsupials?
That's, you know, what's intriguing about that is, you know, the point that, yeah, these creatures are unique to Australia. And isn't it interesting that Australia itself is very similar to what to the conditions of Mars that were shown? You know, almost so much that, you know, if you wanted to go with that very popular Capricorn 1 theory that, you know, we're not actually going to these planets, we didn't actually go to the moon, we're doing it from someplace on Earth, Australia, parts of Australia, big vast areas of it are so similar to what Mars looks like that you could almost believe that, you know, they're just the landers out in Australia somewhere. So it is intriguing with the obvious similarity. Physically, I don't know, maybe there's something to that because, you know, Zechariah Sitchin isn't the only one that has pointed out the importance of, you know, linguistics and etymology with unlocking the secrets to the past. So maybe there's something to it.
Yeah, there may be. I have to say, though, that's the first time I have heard that idea or even thought of that idea. I mean, that's totally new to me. But, you know, pretty clever, actually.
Yeah.
All right, what about the ley lines and the grid systems and UFOs, the theory that they have been seen repairing certain points on the grid system?
Well, as I mentioned before, absolutely anybody who studied this system usually, you know, looks at and acknowledges that, you know, that other researchers have noticed, hey, the greatest concentration of UFO sightings tend to be along these lines, and especially where the intersections are, excuse me, and, you know, it could very well be that this is the civilization that, you know, I mentioned before, long ago lost civilization. Many people call it Atlantis, and you know, these are the people that were the builders of the original great pyramid and the Sphinx, lost to history. Maybe they're the ones that are flying these machines, and maybe they're coming back and they are making repairs to their machine, maybe they're making adjustments that are involved with the mechanism of the polar shift. And that's why they're here, is they're adjusting things, possibly for maximum, maximum protection of existing land masses and maybe to protect as many people as possible. Maybe they don't care. Maybe it's just, you know, one of those things that, you know, the population of civilizations ebb and you know, there's an ebb and flow to it that sometimes it's smaller, sometimes it's larger. And when things have to happen to save the ship, as it were, you know, certain things are lost, but it's very possible that they are here to do these adjustments or repairs. Sir,
do you subscribe to the idea that Atlantis was a real place and a real civilization as opposed to purely mythical?
Absolutely. I'm a great believer in, for one thing, diffusionism. I do not believe in isolationism. In other words, I believe that the remnant, I believe there was an ancient, advanced civilization on this planet. It's talked about in ancient Hindu scriptures. My gosh, just read them. It talks about the war between them. And I believe this is the civilization that we like to call Atlantis. I believe they did have a capital, which is what we call the place Atlantis. And certainly, when the pole shift happened, you know, because they say that Atlantis existed and went under about between 9 to 12,000 years ago, and also, you know, it's possible that's the stretch of years they give for the polar shift. What a coincidence. Yeah, absolutely. I believe that this advanced civilization existed, and then they were the ones that went throughout the world helping the, quite frankly, the lesser civilizations.
Well, do you think that's why
culture and such?
Do you think that is why we find pyramids all over the world, every continent, and virtually every ancient civilization built pyramids? You think it's because of the diffusion of Atlanteans after the destruction of their continent?
Yeah, I certainly do believe that, and I know it's not politically correct because, you know, there's a bunch of people out there that, you know, buy into this politically correct thinking that insults the indigenous, so-called indigenous peoples, and, you know, hey, whether it insults them or not, their own lore, most of these civilizations, these lesser civilizations, these indigenous peoples, their own lore is full of stories that support this. It's only our ridiculously arrogant contemporary academicians, you know, the new priesthood of academia that we have established here that has grown up, that tries to tell us that, you know, a civilization of people wearing loincloths and having, you know, stick and rock hammers built things like the Great Pyramid, you know, log rollers and giant sand ramps, you know, this kind of ridiculous crap. And we're told to believe this in spite of these indigenous peoples in their ancient times having stories of a race of people with advanced technology coming in and doing these things and teaching them these things. It's like they want to ignore the very evidence of what I'm talking about. And, you know, we could argue it till we're blue in the face and, you know, they're just going to laugh at us and chuckle at us. But, yeah.
All right. Now, if the Atlanteans really had high technology and were able to build these pyramids all over the world, and some of them really, really massive, if they were able to do that, and were able to harness electricity, and we see, actually, drawings of the harnessing and use of electricity carved into the walls of some of the ancient frescoes in Egypt.
Yes.
All right. So if they were able to do that, and apparently they were, it's not a big stretch to imagine that the theory that the Great Pyramid was in fact some sort of an energy weapon. But now, if it was, it had to have a control room somewhere, safe.
Yes.
You know, that might be what's in those chambers under the Sphinx.
True. It's possible, or it might be, as both Joseph Farrell and Christopher Dunn have pointed out, it might be what, you know, they're calling the Queen and King's Chamber and all this stuff actually inside the Great Pyramid.
You know, all right, we have to take a break. We'll pick that up when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. We'll take one or two more calls when we come back with Walter Bosley. We are back, and the telephone number is 623-237. I gave you the wrong telephone number. 623-444-5889. We're talking with Walter Bosley. If you have a question or comment, that's the number to call, all right? 623-444-5889. Now, Walter, when we went away for break, I had to cut you off, and you were commenting on the idea that I put forth that if the Great Pyramid was some sort of ancient pulsed energy weapon or something like that, it had to have a control room. And quite possibly, then, that might be what we would find in those rooms under the Sphinx. And you said, yes, but it could also be something else. So I want to give you the floor and let you go with it. We have a caller on hold, so let's don't take too long with it. But what do you think?
Well, as I said, Joseph Farrell and Christopher Dunn have certainly talked about how the rooms inside the pyramid were actually control rooms for the device that the pyramid was, you know, some type of energy device. And they stated a lot better than me, Joseph Farrell and his Giza Death Star trilogy, and Christopher Dunn and his works, that the pyramid was a device, and the things that we're told are burial chambers, of course, would not be burial chambers. They were rooms that were control rooms.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Doug at the Alien Agenda. How are you this evening?
Outstanding, Doug. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. And we're all very excited listening to Mr. Bosley this evening here. I was wondering here, essentially, the best question to ask. I got so many people wanting to ask one here, but I think this is the best one here, really.
Okay.
If all of this tech... I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Okay, if all of this technology existed, where did it go, and if it is it related to aliens, and are they coming back to take back what they had here when, you know, when they did this way back when?
Okay. Well, first, I'm a great believer, and like I said, you know, I started out my interest in all these things years ago. My interest started with UFOs and aliens, and over the years, the more I've studied, you know, these various phenomena, and particularly the ley lines and this ancient history we're talking about, the more I have come to believe that we are the aliens who came here. We are the people who came here with the technology, and before us, the people with the, you know, the advanced technology, they were very much Earthlings. And I don't think that the answer to this mystery is to be found in the extraterrestrial hypothesis. I'm not saying there aren't extraterrestrials. I absolutely believe there are extraterrestrials, other races other than, you know, human. And I do believe they come here. But I think what we're mostly seeing is, you know, are the remnants of a very ancient human technology. I think that these remnants have been rediscovered over history and tapped into again, re-engineered. And I personally believe that most of what people are assuming, because a lot of times there's that leap in logic that, wow, look how advanced that is, it must be extraterrestrial. I disagree with that. Having come from the Air Force and having been somewhat involved in program protection, that's why I say most of what people are seeing, most of it, it's our own technology, folks. It's our own platforms. And you know what? We are smart enough to do this stuff. We are advanced enough to do this stuff. What the problem is, the witnesses many times, in their excitement, in memories, they'll exaggerate what they saw. Certainly I think the extraterrestrials are aware of, you know, this line system we're talking about, and certainly, you know, I would say that they probably, you know, use it, but I really think that I think there's a factor here involved with us and our own history that is actually as big a part of the secret as the whole presence of extraterrestrials. It's as much the secret that's being kept from us as the existence of extraterrestrials. And so I just don't see that's the end-all, be-all, you know, answer to this mystery. I think it's just a part of a bigger thing, a subset of a much larger reality as Jacques.
Well, we have lost Walter, and I don't know what caused that. I did not cause it. Doug, I want to thank you for the call. We'll try to reestablish contact with Walter here, and we'll see what happens. Maybe it will work, and maybe it will not work. We will just have to see. I think Walter may have ventured into an area that somebody did not really want him to talk about, but we'll see if we can get him back. And pardon the delay while we do that. I don't think we're going to be able to get Walter back on the line. It appears that his phone is dead. Because my phone is working, and Walter is not reachable. So we'll give it one more shot and see what happens here. Well, it is working now.
Wasn't that stupid, though?
Walter, you must have hit a raw nerve with someone. Hang on just a moment. All right. You must have hit a raw nerve with someone, sir. Maybe, you know, see, I don't understand, Walter. Now, you've been in the intel business.
What was I saying when I got cut off?
Well, you had made the statement that a lot of this technology is this ancient technology very likely is us, and that we are smart enough to have done this, and that the extraterrestrials may not be the answer to all this. And but you see, when they do this, Walter, whoever it is, they signal that you've just told something that's true. They're not too smart. I mean, first of all, whoever's doing that is treasonous and does not love America. If they did, they would love the Constitution, and they wouldn't do that crap. So, you know, they're worthy of prosecution, and it's my great hope that someday they will be. But having said that, they're also excessively stupid to do it because they just signaled what it is they didn't want you to say.
And you know, and even if we can't prove that, it sure does leave that impression in many people's minds, right?
Well, it certainly left that impression in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, well, he's saying something we don't want him to be telling people. Cut him off. Well, when you do that, you just said to the world, pay attention to what this man just said. That isn't your intention, but you just accomplished that, and people in 95 countries are paying attention to it. I want to thank you guys for the help. It's just like you took a highlighter pen and put it right across what Walter said and said, pay attention to this. So, Walter, say it again.
I'll say that the technology that most people are seeing that they believe is extraterrestrial, we've been conditioned. Many people have been conditioned to make that assumption. They want you to make that assumption. A lot of this is our own technology. We've been using it for, you'd be surprised how long human beings have been using this technology. I don't know if you heard it or not, but, you know, my bona fides to say something like this is having been in the Air Force OSI and having kind of been involved in the world of program protection. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to tell you stuff I shouldn't be telling you that's out there.
Well, we're almost out of time anyway. Invite people to get your books. Tell us real quick, because the music is playing. What's the names of your books?
The best way to get them, you can read my Disneyland book. Everybody out there can read it for free. It's the information I want out there, so I have made it free. I've sacrificed.
You're out of time.
Lulu.com and put in Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom.
All right. Stay with us online. I want to talk with you after we get off of the after I get off of the air. All right, folks. Wish we had more time. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.